Inoho, please be seated.
Good morning. Anything arising overnight? Okay, that's good. So I'll release that minute because I don't need to amend it again. And it should be hopefully out and on the website around about 10 o'clock today, if not earlier. So, okay, with you, Mr. Page.
Thank you, Mum. So I now call Brendan James Sheehan. Mr. Sheehan's already in the witness box.
Yep, I see that.
Is your full name Brendan James Sheehan?
It is.
And are you a civil engineer and the principal of Mount Oram Engineering Consultants Limited?
I am.
And did you prepare a brief of evidence dated the 4th of February 2021?
I did.
And is that brief of evidence true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
Yes.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to do a couple of things. Firstly, just ask you some questions just to orient ourselves to the work that you do. And secondly, I'm going to ask you to take us through a PowerPoint presentation that you've prepared and was provided to the court yesterday. So firstly, can you just give us a bit of a roundup about who your clients are and what dams you work with in Otago?
Certainly. So I am a dam engineer. I specialise in dam safety, and that includes all aspects of dam design, construction, remediation, etc. And I'm going to talk more about that in my presentation. My clients in central Otago at the moment, have formal contracts with three irrigation companies, Maniatoto, Ida Valley, and the Galloway Irrigation Society. I've also worked on a number of the other irrigation schemes in different aspects, including as part of this hearing. And I also work for the hydro company, so I currently do work for Pioneer Energy, looking after their dam portfolio.
Thank you. In your evidence, you discuss something called the NSOLD large dam guidelines. Can you give us a little background about your involvement or understanding of the development of those guidelines in New Zealand?
Sure. So I'm going to talk more about this in my presentation to the panel. But I've been part of NSOLD since 1995, and the development of that has been central in developing the dam safety guidelines, how we manage the dams from design and construction and right through the life cycle of the dam. So I'll talk more about that in my presentation.
And can you just sort of tell us what your understanding is about what regulatory changes in relation to the NSOLD guidelines are afoot?
Sure. Again, I'm going to talk a wee bit about this, the legislation, and give you an overview. But at the moment, we're in no man's land as far as dam safety legislation goes. And that's because the Dam Safety Building Act in 2008 was revoked or repealed in 2015, and we've been waiting for central government to produce a new set of regulations around dam safety since that time. And NSOLD as a group, so the New Zealand Society of Large Dams, has been very influential in trying to make sure that the guidelines that they've put together are part of that regulation going forward.
Okay. And through your involvement in NSOLD, do you have any insight about when regulations are likely to be promulgated?
Yes, so currently the Ministry of Building, Innovation and Employment, I think they're called, are tasked with putting that together, and they made an announcement in March this year that they're going to release the new regulations in, later in the year is the way they've described it.
So later this year?
Yes, 2021. Yeah.
Thank you. And so when you prepared your evidence, did you have in mind the likelihood that those regulations will apply during the PC 7 6-year period between now and...
Yeah, absolutely. So the regulations are definitely coming. They should have been in place a couple of years ago, but through a number of reasons, they haven't been put in place. That being, we had a change of government, we had COVID. There's a real education process that is, NSOLV's been a big part of educating central government around, you know, what dams are and how we look after dams and all that sort of thing. So most definitely, the expectation is that towards the end of this year, these regulations will be in place.
Okay. Yeah. So in your advice to dam owners currently then, what's the source of obligations on dam owners that you are... your engineering advice is directed towards?
Well, fortunately, the regulations that were released in 2008, most of the companies are working, have been working since that time under that sort of framework of dam safety. So their programs are already set up. So we're just managing those through this period when there's no legislation in place. We're using the old regulations, in fact, as the guide for managing dam safety for existing structures. So it's the new structures that have been built, dams. So an example is the Waimea Dam in Marlborough that's been built at the moment. So it's operating under the consents, and the consents direct them to specifically use the guidelines.
Okay. Thank you. Well, that's all I have by way of scene-setting questions. So do you have a means to take us through the PowerPoint presentation which you provided to the court? There we go. I'm in your hands, Mr. Sheehan. Take us through it as you wish.
Thank you. So my intention today is just to give you an overview of the legislation around dams, talk about the guidelines that were used to look after the dams from conception to the end of their life, and talk to you about dam owner responsibility, and finally talk to you about some of the concerns I guess I have about the process that you're going through at the moment and where dams actually fit into that. I've got lots of pretty pictures, and pointing the wrong way. Sorry. That's the Upper Manaburn Dam. That's the only known picture of that dam in that state, and I'll talk a wee bit more about that in a moment. So that's part of the Ida Valley scheme.
As you discussed, you keep as close as you can to your microphone so
sure.
that the recording is clear and people in the back of the court can hear. Thank you.
Okay, just an overview of what I'm going to talk about today. To give some context to my discussion, I want to run through some of the dams in Otago and just help the panel understand, where and what they're used for, the ages of the dam, the different types of dams, and their different uses. So that would be the three key things I'd like you to take out of the first part of the presentation. Then I'm going to focus on the Menihera Kia catchment. I'm here at the invitation of ORUG, and so just talk about their dams and talk about the dam safety legislation, the guidelines, and then finally the responsibilities around looking after these dams. So without further ado, just a snapshot of some of the dams that we've got across Otago. That's not all of them, and I've taken the liberty to include Glenorchy in on this. Pioneer Energy is a bit like Trustpower. They've got dams everywhere, so part of this presentation I took out of a dam training exercise I presented to Pioneer Energy a month ago, and so fortuitously I was asked to prepare something similar for the panel, and and this was it. So you can see that we've got a range of dams across our portfolio or our region, and that they've got many uses. The other thing I haven't added in here is most of these have got recreational uses too. So some of the more notable dams, some of these you'll know, but I'd like to start off with one that's about 10 minutes from here. This is the Ross Creek Dam. I've added a few more, a bit more information than I have on other slides, particularly for you, Commissioner. This is one of the oldest dams in the country, and from a dam engineering perspective... From a dam engineering perspective, the things that I would look at are the age. So this is, you know, a really old dam. The period around when it was constructed, and the guy that designed and built this was an Englishman, came out from the UK, and I think they set up the Dunedin Waterworks, and he was tasked to build this dam. Gabriel Gully's gold find was in 1861, and the population in Dunedin exploded just after that time. And this is one of the ways they addressed some pretty significant health concerns at the time, was to build this dam. So at that time, it would have been like the Clyde Dam. It was a massive structure. It's one of the few like this in the country. It's a puddle core dam, which is a technique we would definitely not use today, but it's what's important about is understanding that this the construction design standards of the day and the construction technique of the day, and this was definitely shovel and wheelbarrow and horse and cart, leave some some gaps in the long-term integrity of this dam. So it's the sort of dam that you really want to focus your dam safety program on in terms of looking after for the life of the dam. So about 10 years ago, they discovered some problems with this dam, and I can't speak highly enough of the owner, which is DCC in this case, engineers involved, and the Regional Council in supporting the upgrade of this project. It's a lovely wee dam. Sorry. Sure. Absolutely. I'll get to mine shortly. So this is Onslow Dam. It's been modified 3 times already. In fact, it's been modified 4 times. So up in the top left-hand corner was the original masonry structure. Again, the people that came out of the UK had that sort of knowledge. That's the way they built their structures back in the day. It was 5 metres high, the top left-hand corner, then they added another 3 metres to it, and then they added what we call a hungry board on top. They put another metre on top of that just to get as much water in storage as they could. And in 1982, the Otago Central Electric Power Board built this wee concrete arch dam. And this one down here on the right-hand side is part of what I look after. And for those of you that have been following it in the newspaper, the Onslow Pump Storage Project is... has been front and centre of recent times, so there is potential for Onslow to be modified again. The wee dam in the right-hand corner here is 14 metres high. The new one they're talking about is 120 metres high. So that'll be the one, two, three, four. That'll be the fifth time this has been modified, this particular reservoir.
What's the relationship between the two dams?
The top left one, or the top two pictures... are still there. That dam is still there. And so they just filled up the reservoir and submerged it. Yeah.
Oh, it's been superseded by the
one. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so.
Mr. Shear, do you agree that there are current impairments in relation to these structures?
Yeah, I was made aware of that last night, that this particular dam, and it's not the one in the bottom right hand corner, it's the old dam, has got a deemed permit associated with it, even though it's submerged.
Is anyone representing permit holders for Onslow Dam?
Pioneer Energy.
No, that's Pioneer Energy.
Pioneer Energy is. What did Pioneer want? Pioneer didn't want much. Submission.
Well, I read their submission. I think the only one they talked about was the phrasing. And said they wished to be heard, but they haven't turned up. Beyond what I read there.
This is the Ewburn Dam, a wee earth embankment dam near Naseby, part of the Hawkesons irrigation scheme. Again, a very old structure, again built with horse and cart. So why am I saying that? It's just because it's so old and because of the techniques that they use, it just makes us be more cautious around making sure the dam safety is in place, and we're monitoring the behaviour of the dam over time. Jumping through to 1931, the Trust Power Dam at the Waipori scheme, lovely wee structure. And then the Fraser Dam. I'm happy to talk about the Fraser Dam as we go through, but I know there's been some commentary around the Fraser Dam and the integrity of the dam, but I'm all over this dam, so I'm very happy to...
Well, you should talk about it, because the only commentary we have was a... That person would not have been qualified technically to be talking about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, when we get further down the track, I'll talk about this one. And what I'll be talking about is applies to a lot of these dams. There's not a lot of information around about them, so it's about just using your nous, using experience to make good decisions around looking after them. And then there's big dams like this that you will know. This is the Roxburgh Dam, built in 1957. Great big concrete gravity dam, very robust. And again, the Clyde Dam. And then the last dam that was built in this part of the world belongs to Pioneer Energy again. This is what we call a roller compacted concrete dam. And it's a solid wee structure, lovely wee dam. But you can see it was 22 years ago that we built the last big, what we would call a large dam in this part of the world. So, and that's discounting the farm structures that have been built, the farm storage ponds that have been built, which don't currently fall under the large dam sort of guidelines. I'm going to talk about the guidelines, but potentially under the new MB regulations that they're introduced, and I should have said this before, they've got a website that you can go to, so I'm only repeating what they're have already said. Yes, they would. Absolutely. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the on-farm structures.
Under the building.
Yes.
The on-farm structures, and we, I don't know, it's probably, it may be in the evidence or it may not be in the evidence, what on-farm structures require, whether they require resource consent or it's just building consent. Are you able to talk about that?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
As much as I can, yeah. I'm going to jump to Central Otago Dams now. As part of this dam training exercise I did, I put together a list of dams that that I know about in Central Otago, and of those 32, I probably look after about 20. But they're all, some of them are redundant, one or two of them, and some of them now fall outside the large dam, so the Kawara Falls Bridge there. Skipper's Creek's got a wee dam on it, but it's full of gravel, so, but it's still a dam. But the rest of them have pretty robust dam safety systems.
What criteria are you used to determine 32? Okay. Roughly.
I guess anything that had been associated with hydro generation or irrigation schemes would be, and anything over a certain size, really, you know, I have to be careful what I say, but, you know, 6 metres and above, and you're starting to probably have quite a bit of storage behind it.
Okay, that's good. Thank you.
What's your hesitancy in terms of commenting?
Well, the whole discussion around farm storage, and it's not just farms, it's irrigation and horticulture have got ponds too. And I've built some of them. And so those that that were over a certain height, so currently the regulations say greater than 4 metres and greater than in height, and that height is from the crest to the front toe of the dam. So if you can imagine on a gully going down, it doesn't take much to take up 4 metres, and you don't have a lot of storage behind you. But on a flatter location, and Loganbroom Dam, which I am going to talk about, is a perfect example. You haven't got a very big dam, but you've got a massive amount of storage behind it. And that's the beauty of Onslow. And I don't want to get into that debate, because I know there are some going to be some pretty heated ones around taking land and ecology and all that sort of thing. But if you're looking for bang for buck, that those sort of sites are ideal. So,
So your hesitancy in commenting what is a dam is to do with Onslow and future aspirations for Onslow, or is to do with more generally about client perceptions around regulation?
Well, part of the regulations that MB have announced, they what the dam engineering fraternity were hoping is that there would be some relaxation around the heights and storage, and I guess that they would take more of a there would be more recognition for us as dam engineers that we would be able to make good decisions around what one should come under the dam safety guidelines and what ones shouldn't or didn't need to, because there's a lot of money associated with putting consents together. You know, it's not just the designs, it's the regulatory parties don't have that in-house experience, so they use consultants, and we're a very small gene pool, so we all know each other, and while I mightn't always agree with their consultants and we have some pretty robust debates, you know, they're in good hands having those that sort of arrangement. But back to my point about the size of the dam, it really does come down, they're so unique, they're so individual, that we were kind of hoping that we would get more of a say. But what has happened is they've announced, and these are only draft announcements, that there's no change to the 4 metre high and the 20,000 storage, but what they have added in is 1 metre high and 40,000 cubic stored. So that just about
takes in every farm?
Yes, it does.
Yeah, okay.
So it's not saying that every farm has to have the guidelines, you know, applied to them. What they're going to do is they're going to say, and I'm going to talk about this, they're going to say, well, what's the risk of failure? You know, and so some of these on-farm ones, they'll just flow into existing rivers and, you know, it doesn't really matter. But what's an example? The cherry's industry has just exploded in central Otago. And so there's lots of wee ponds and bigger ponds, and they're getting bigger and bigger because the hectares that they're putting into grapes and horticultural and cherries and whatever are getting bigger. So they need more water. And so all of a sudden these structures are sitting above main roads and lifestyle blocks they're just everywhere. And to give you an example of numbers, because I've been too scared to do the numbers for Otago, but for Marlborough, one of the dam engineers that I know that works predominantly in Marlborough, he's under these new guideline rules, he's looking at 160 dams. It's just a nightmare. And we are a small gene pool, and I guess my fear is that the industry's not big enough to have the right people doing the right assessments. And that's just my personal opinion. So there are lots of challenges ahead. And we've still got to look after these ones. I'm going to show you this now, but my point being here is that a lot of these dams are really old. You know, and they're like your grandmother, they're like your great-grandmother in terms of how we would look after them. So you can, if you look at the numbers down the bottom, in between 1880 and 1940, we built 20 dams, and then we built, what did we build after that? 12. So a massive building program through the Depression years, mm. when central government did its thing and supported growth and helped the communities through those periods. You know, the farming community were very proactive in lobbying the government because, you know, farming was the backbone of the country. And I've spent a lot of time in recent times trying to get my head around some of these older dams, trying to find information around them. So I've been reading all this documentation and it's fantastic the way they lobbied for what and what they got because of their lobbying. And nothing was quick. You know, you caught a train from here to Wellington. It took you a week. So, you know, these were... they'd send someone, a delegate, away from here to talk to Wellington and they'd be away for a month. And it's like, oh my gosh, now we fax and it's like, or email or whatever we do. But yeah, massive challenges. So a huge building program through the Depression years. And then I kind of thought, well, you know, why did they do all this building? And it, you know, in central Otago, or Otago in particular, we started out with gold mining, that were leading the charge, and then we went into irrigation and a sprinkling of town water, but then, you know, big emphasis on hydroelectricity. And again, if you look at the dates, you can see where all those activities occurred. I'm going to jump into the Minnehiri catchment now and talk about the dams there, but I'll carry on. So the catchment, my understanding is the catchment's made up of two parts, and the Ida Valley, which I look after on the right-hand side there, and the Minnehiri Valley itself, which only has one dam at the head of it, and that's the Falls Dam. So here's the dams here, and what they're used for. So they're predominantly irrigation, and Falls Dam was built for irrigation and was retrofitted subsequently, and they put a wee hydro scheme in, which is a great use of a resource that was going out of the dam anyway. So it's hard to stack up economically, but once they're there, they're a fantastic asset, and they should be doing this a bit more probably, not particularly on these sites, but on other sites around the country. And as you can see, that the dates 1902 to 1955, it's the majority of them were actually built between 1902 and 1935. There's just one outlier there. This is the first one in that portfolio, Spearcross Creek. It's in behind Alexandra. It's a rock masonry dam. And you can see from the attire that the ladies are wearing, it was a major social outing in the day. These were phenomenal structures, and when you read the press articles and that, they were written up as, you know, great engineering feats, and so everyone wanted to go and see them, and they did. So on Sunday, they'd all rock up and have a look at the dams, which is it's not something we probably, you know, do now. The Upper Manabrun, built in 1914, it's the second biggest irrigation catchment in central Otago. The Loganburn has got 110 million cubic metres. This one's got 55 million cubic metres. Extremely important to the Ida Valley irrigation scheme. They've got another one, another big one, the Pulburn Dam, which might even be next. Another wee weir. This is just a diversion weir which drops it into, they've got about 110 kilometres of races, I think, and this is the start of picking the water up out of the Manabrun stream and diverting it into the...
How do you distinguish between a weir and a dam?
I just think of weirs as small structures, anything under about... For me, anything under about 6 metres is probably a weir. I think that one's about 7. They've got a very small reservoir capacity. They're just there as a training exercise, so they train the water into the canal, into the feeding race. Yeah.
So the two factors for a dam are the height and the storage. Is that what you said?
Yeah, because the storage equates to risk too. You know, there's a lot of water sitting back there Water's just waiting to do its thing, you know. It's waiting to be released. You tip a bucket over a full of water, it's not waiting there, it's falling out. And that's why we need to be all over these structures. Again, if you look at the age of these things, you know, we've got some dental concrete issues here. It's not a major. Is the dam, is this where we're going to collapse? No, but in terms of looking after the dam, we will address that over time. And they've already done some work on this before my time. So it's more about aesthetics on what we're looking at here. But it's, you know, it's one of these things that it's just, it's an ongoing, it's like painting your house. Every 10 years you paint your house. So these things, you can't wait 10 years when these sort of things happen. You need to be addressing them. It's not a dam safety issue. It's more of a maintenance issue of when we look at something like that. So then we jump into Poolburn Dam. And might say that the engineering design of these things changed quite radically through this period. So we leant heavily on the Americans. They're kind of about 10, 20 years ahead of us in everything we seem to do. And so lots of learnings came out of America, which was a good thing because they had a few issues in the early dams. And so if we look at Manaburn Dam, which was built in 1914, and we look at this one here, which was built in 1931, it's poles apart in terms of design, design understanding, it really is, and quality of cement and quality control as they were building it. So they really started to understand that, and they put an emphasis on that. Which, so for this wheat structure here, it's one of mine, and I have real confidence about the structural integrity of this dam. Whereas the one before that you just saw up in Manaburn, it's got a few teething problems, and so for me, I need to focus my energies on making sure I'm happy that that one's been looked after properly. So how do I do that? Well, most of these old dams don't have any instrumentation. If you go to Clyde Dam, you could spend all day looking at the instrumentation. Well, this one here, for example, it's got a couple of piezos, so monitoring water seepage around the dams. It's got deformation surveys, which measure movement in three directions, upstream, downstream, and vertically. But really, the best surveillance on a dam like this is the race manager, the operations manager. So the most important thing for me to do is have a good relationship with those guys. So you met Roger Williams. They're all peas in a pod, these guys, you know. They're fantastic, dedicated people. And so I speak to my guys every week. In fact, I speak to them every other day if something's happening. So I've been here 3 days, and in those 3 days, I've talked to them 4 times. And just because I know that they're going up there, and I'll say to them, listen, you know, what's happening? And they'll say, oh, I'm going up to shut this valve down here. And I say, well, while you're there, remember that wet spill on the other side of the dam? Make sure you have a look at that and just send me a text. Everything's the same. Now, once a month, they have a formal program they go through and they write out a check sheet and I look at that and we talk about it. But the most important thing is the eyes on the site. So,
Mr. Sheehan, before you move from Poolburn, is that also a deemed permit dam?
No, sorry, the one before it was, though, Poolburn Weir.
Oh, I see.
Yep. So Poolburn Dam is not, for some reason.
Thank you.
Yep. This is the Poolburn Weir downstream. Again, it's a diversion stream, so the way their irrigation network is set up, they're manipulating water all around the place. And this has a feeder out of the Poolburn Dam that drops into the creek and then it runs down into here and it has a race. If we're looking downstream on the left-hand side, that also flows into this weir. And then on the right-hand side, it runs down the right-hand side of the valley and distributes out into the farm network. Now, although this is only a small dam and although I've called it a weir, but a small structure, we still look after it as if it were the main Poolburn Dam. And that's because of its age and because of who lives downstream. And I know that if we nip things in the bud early, where these things will last, you know, the longevity of these structures is going to be fine going forward. There's another structure. There's a couple of structures in this Menihere catchment that are not under my sort of overseeing. The Eiderburn Dam and the Falls Dam, and just to acknowledge one of the dam engineers, he's based here in Dunedin, and his name is Ian Walsh. Now, I don't know about the dam safety programs for Falls Dam and this one here, the Eiderburn Dam, but I do know Ian Walsh very well. He's one of our premier dam engineers, so any advice Ian gives, and I know he will be given advice, will be sound around those dams. So in that Menihere catchment, I am excluding those on-farm ponds that we talked about previously. I'm very happy with the dam safety programs for these structures. Oops.
With Falls Dam, did you say Ian Walsh was responsible, or you?
Ian Walsh.
Yes.
Yeah. So, do you know Ian, Commissioner?
Yeah.
Yeah. Lower Manaburn Dam is another one of mine, Galloway. And so it's got a couple of niggling dental problems, and we're addressing those over the next sort of little while. So, lovely wee dam. Really idyllic location, and I know a lot of people use this one recreationally too. And then this Falls Dam, and top left-hand corner for your benefit, Commissioner, is the hydro scheme being put in place by Pioneer Energy. At that time, though, I think they were Pioneer Generation. And this is the glory hole here in the right-hand picture, which is the spillway that they use for any excess water that builds up behind the dam. So every dam is different, and every dam has its challenges. And this one, you know, will have its challenges. I don't know in detail what they are, but throughout the life of these structures, you know, we just continually are working through, you know, problems on them. Problems, not quite a word. Reviewing and upskilling their knowledge. So the big ones that we apply to these structures relate to floods and earthquakes. So as if we think or if we believe flood hydrology is changing, and there could be a bearing on that from climate change, for example, then every so often those sorts of numbers need to be reviewed to make sure that the spillway capacity on these structures is adequate. And if they aren't, then we need to, you know, increase that capacity. Likewise with the earthquakes, you know, we've had some pretty major earthquakes in this country in recent years, and there have been some massive learnings out of those. And it's about making sure that these structures still meet those sort of criteria that the guidelines set out for us around earthquake, and making sure that the structures are safe. So periodically we go back and look at those.
Yeah, earthquakes featured back in the 1800s when the English came.
Yeah, absolutely nowhere. Yeah.
Pardon?
Nowhere. There was no... they just didn't have earthquakes in England. Or the UK, and so it was really low on their priority list. In fact, I don't think it featured at all. So, and even their understanding about, you know, spillways and things, we've just advanced so much. It's, you know, they're light years away. It doesn't mean that they're unsafe structures. It just means that we need to constantly keep an eye on them. You know, just as you would with your grandmother. I keep using that term, and I apologise for that, but, you know, grandmothers are definitely going to have some health issues, and these older dams are definitely going to have some health issues. Legislation. So I alluded to some of the things before when Mr. Page was asking me the questions, but I just want to give the court some confidence, I guess, that the dam safety programs that we've got are well considered and we've adopted international best practice around what we do. So the way the legislation came about was that, and I have to go back a few years, I started my dam engineering world with ECNZ, the Electricity Corporation, and at that time the dams were not, there was no legislation around dams, and this was quite concerning to the people in NSOLD who were the leading dam engineers in the country, and they were heavily influenced, would be a better way of describing it, heavily influenced by what had gone on in America. So they, like I said before, that they were sort of 10, 20, 30 years ahead of our building program. So they were starting to see the effects, or they were developing programs for looking after these structures going forward. So ECNZ was split up by the government in the late 90s, was it? And
80s, yeah.
Yeah, sorry, the late 80s. And at that time, ECNZ, and I was part of the technical specialist group there that looked after all the dams. So we, just to give this some context, we looked after, ECNZ produced 97% of the electricity in the country. And so you can imagine how many dams were associated with that. And, you know, I was part of that, and we looked after, I thought every dam in the country was absolutely fantastic. And so ECNZ had a major influence on dams throughout the country. So when ECNZ was split up, we had a really robust dam safety program, part of the sales agreement to the Big Four, so Contact, Meridian, Genesis, and it was Mighty River, and now it's Mercury, was part of the sales agreement was they had to have a dam safety program, which is great. You know, they look after all the big dams, and it's part of their policy statements, you know, dams shall be safe and all those things. It's all great stuff, and they took our model, our monitoring model, and they have developed that. They've got a wee company that three of them actually own. It's called Dam Safety Intelligence, I think it is, and they're responsible for looking after all their dam safety programs. And Contact Energy, they decided not to buy into that, so they've got their own program. But I know the guys in Contact Energy, and I know the consultants that work for them, and they've got a really robust system too. And so because ECNZ was owned by the government, all of a sudden government became aware that all these dams were, you know, outside the legislation. So that's what initiated the 2008. It took a while to get going. The 2008 legislation, and from a dam engineering perspective, we were delighted, and the senior people above me were really delighted, because they knew that the gene pool was shrinking because we're not building dams, and that they had to have the Bible in place. And they were really happy. So you can imagine in 2015 when we had a symposium and Minister Nick Smith rocked up and gave his talk and announced that they were revoking them. It's like, oh my gosh.
What was the reason for that?
Well, I've never got to the bottom of it, but one of the things that was driving, according to those that I've talked about in recent times, was that it was under the Building Act, and now they're going to put it under the RMA.
Oh, okay.
So not building new dams or refurbishing, major refurbishments on dams is still the Building Act. Mm. You still need to apply for that. Mm. So Ross Creek, that's what they had to do. But the dam safety part of it will sit under the RMA somehow.
Mm.
Yeah. And back when we had the 2008 legislation. They put together a register of people that could, you know, were dam engineers. Mm. So I think there was about 33 or something, and of those, I probably knew 99% of them. And they're proposing to do something like that under the new regulations. And, you know, that's probably important. And like I said, the gene pool is shrinking, and it's just a matter of making sure we get the right people there, because...
So your hope, or MB's indication anyway, is that you'll get new regs sometime this year.
Yes.
Sitting under which act? Don't they need to sit under any act? So they're under the Building Act, under the RMA?
Under the RMA. And I'm not sure, you know, they're going to put it under three branches, is my understanding.
Three branches of the RMA.
Yeah, isn't the RMA going to...
The new RMA.
Yeah.
Three pieces of...
Yeah. which has complicated it again. And I'm just hoping that they're not going to defer it again. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, well, that's the question.
Yeah.
Now, are they going to defer it till they have the three new pieces of legislation? Don't know.
So
you're hoping that
that's unlikely this year if they do.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, that's... Yeah. So what's happened from a regulatory thing is, you know, what we've noticed is that the consents that have been issued for on-farm mm-hmm. ponds or dams, et cetera, are starting to reference this,
mm-hmm.
and it's kind of forcing the hand of people that are building these things to you know, comply with the guidelines.
And you're holding up, what's the title of the document you're holding up?
This is the New Zealand Dam Safety Guidelines, the 2015 edition, which I had to flog off a client before I came here.
This is the NSOL one.
Yes, it is. Mm. Yeah. And it's been put together by, you know, regulatory people, dam engineers, consultants, dam owners. So it's a fantastic document.
Mm.
Can't speak highly enough of it. And, yeah.
Was this document put in place to fill the gap with the revocation of the building dam safety regulations? Is that what happened? 2015, those regs are revoked.
Yep.
And there's nothing put in place by the government of that time.
Yep.
And so are those guidelines what the industry have put in place?
The industry put in place, the first guidelines came out in about 90 or 91.
Mm.
But again, if I can just talk to you a wee bit about the history. So I talked to the guy who actually put them together, and again you have to understand that the dam engineering industry back in that time was very engineering focused. It was all about the dams. We were the top of the totem pole until the RMA came in. And I've got a newfound respect for my environmental consultant colleagues here because of this. But, you know, it definitely it's they are driving the ship now and we are doing our thing down here. But back in the day, 1991...
The engineers were keen.
Yeah. Thank you, Your Honour.
They still are.
Yeah. So the guidelines came out in 1991, and the gentleman I spoke to who put them all together, who was asked to put them together, he had a fantastic understanding about the acts, and he'd done work with MAF and water and soil, and at that time the guidelines were prepared and the whole focus was on lifetime management of the dams. Who wrote it?
Yes.
His name was Derek Wiltshire.
Oh, right, Derek Wiltshire.
Yeah, he's a fantastic man. He was out fishing when I rang him up, and he put the fish on hold. Like, he's obviously a very passionate man about this, and it was just lovely to talk to him. But he had a fantastic understanding about, as he said, you know, it was about the rights to use the water. Setting up so that, you know, conditions under which the water would be supplied would be really well understood, and that there would be a dam safety program that would be followed. And at that time, we were following the USA model, which was called the Safety Evaluation of Existing Dams. An acronym was SEED. And it was all about the dams.
Mm.
And like I said, I worked for ECNZ. And around the mid-90s, my boss at the time, a gentleman by the name of Murray Killen, who's just recently retired, an extremely good engineer, he had been doing some international work, and some of the work that we were been doing in New Zealand required international people come in, and he recognised that there was sort of a disconnect between how we were managing our dams in New Zealand and how others, including America, had sort of advanced their programs. And so he got a gentleman out of BC Hydro in Canada to come and talk and have a look at our systems and make recommendations. And that's, you know, we've fundamental change now. So when we start out looking at the dams, we focus on they call it consequence of risk, but risk, and it's not about the dam, it's about the risk downstream. So forget about the dam goes, what happens if all that water goes? Doesn't matter what dam it is. And so it's about people, it's about environment, and it's about economics. Those are the three things, and the guideline really sets that out. And so that's what determines the risk categorisation of the dams. So we've got really simple, low, medium and high, and the medium and high, they have to have dam safety programs. But what we normally do is capture the low ones in there anyway, because it's just easier to do that.
And the regs are, the guidelines rather, they describe what is your high, medium and low risk dams.
They do.
Yeah.
So that you follow through a bit of a process, and it's called a guideline because they're so unique, these dams. You know, it can't be a cookbook.
Yep.
You can't apply Clyde to Pulburn. It just doesn't work like that. So now EMSOLD has evolved too, and it has developed into an organisation that crosses so many spectrums now. You know, there's a big influence from regulatory people, and they have been on the board, which is fantastic. Academia, that's fantastic too. They really have a big push on making sure that they're on top of the acts, and so any regulations, things and stuff happen, they have legal people come and talk to them, they have ministers come and talk to them. You know, they're just trying to stay abreast of what they think is really important for the industry. And I should have mentioned that, again, central government, it started out, the Ministry of Building was tasked with looking after this, then it was the Ministry of Environment, and now it's the MB who have been tasked with. And like I said before, I'm not sure how the RMA is going to all fit into this, but somehow we're all going to come together, which is good. And the last point, of course, is the regulatory people are tasked with looking after that. So just to explain that, around dams, the regulatory organisations up and down the country have agreed that in the North Island, Waikato looks after all the dams in the North Island, and in the South Island currently, ECAN looks after Marlborough, West Coast and Canterbury, and Otago looks after Otago and Southland.
And you're talking about the Regional Council for Otago?
Yes.
Yep, okay.
Sorry, yeah. So Environment Southland has given that responsibility or agreed that Otago will look after that, you know. And Otago is currently working through with ECAN to hand that up to them too, so they'll just have a central one for the South Island.
How are they looking after things? Like with ORC, there's an present absence of regulation. So how are they tasked, or by what authority do they have to look after anything? Is that under the Building Act or an Building Act, possibly? Yeah. Which piece of legislation confers them the power to be doing anything?
Yeah, so with the regulation revoked the way it is, we're just rocking and rolling, and I think they are too, the way we were always. So, you know, there's an expectation that we'll send them in reports monthly, sorry, not monthly, annually, and then 5-yearly inspections. We follow that up, you know, and that we'll give them progress reports. I'm going to talk about Loganburn and, you know, they've been part of that all the way through. So if we need to control releases out of a reservoir so that we can do maintenance, they need to know. So we're communicating that sort of thing, but really there's no regulations. They don't have a lot of power. But they're going to get it soon, hopefully.
So what are the criteria do IRC apply in terms of the size of dam?
The 4 metre high and the 20,000 stored, greater than both.
Okay.
Yeah. So that, in, you know, there's a bit of a grey area around some of the, I guess, maintenance work that we're going to, that's coming up on some of these dams. You know, do they need to be a party to that? I probably will, just because it keeps everybody happy. But really, they probably, you know, the sort of work that I'm talking about, you know, they probably don't need to be. Like I said before, they're really just, they put everything out to consultants anyway. So, you know, there's, yeah, they've been handed a bit of a grenade, really. It's difficult to manage something when you don't have that in-house knowledge. Yeah, so they're doing the best they can, and the system seems to work. We all seem to be working together. We don't always agree, but we get there.
Who handed the grenade?
That you're suggesting, I'm just looking at the permitted activity for damming in Otago.
Sure.
And,
so
and,
this
and
is
that
country.
Talks about water immediately upstream of the dam is no more than 3 metres deep. Did you say 4 metres?
Yeah.
And the volume of water stored by the dam is no more than 20,000 cubic metres.
Well, my understanding is it's 4 metres. 3 metres, I mean, you just couldn't get enough water behind it to be to warrant.
Sure, I'm just thinking about it in resource management terms, and so and the volume of water stored. What did
it's
you say
greater,
that was?
Greater than 20,000. Yeah. So if you have a look on the
I'm just looking at what you can do under the Resource Management Act without getting any consent.
It's
a permitted activity. And then you can't have your catchment upstream more than 50 hectares in area. That's another constraint on a permitted activity.
Sure.
No resource consent required.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. So what you're saying is what you're doing is not quite aligned with that.
No, I think it is.
Well, yeah, if you have a look on the
20,000 cubic metres. Well, 20,000 what?
20,000 stored. 20,000 cubic metres stored.
Cubic metres storage. And so that the regulation is 3 metres, so that's below for permitted, and 20,000 storage. So, yeah.
If you have a look on OIC's website, I think you'll find it's 4 metres and 20,000.
Sure.
So that's what we all operate to. So, so what's happened is that, you know, the contractors who are working for the farmers without the engineers, you know, they build them to 3.9 metres.
Yeah.
So, and I don't have a problem with that because I know most of the contractors and, you know, the ones that are cowboys, they soon get found out and all that sort of thing. But where we have a problem is if MB introduces this new regulation about 1 metre high and 40,000. So all these dams that these guys have built, no information. It's like, well, where do you start? And so supposedly, as engineers, I'm going to sign off on these things. Well, I'm not going to put my credibility on the line for somebody that...
Some of the regulations require retrospective consents?
They, potentially, Just because they may trigger the, you know, the medium to high PIC, the potential impact risk. So if they do trigger that, then yeah, you're right, Commissioner, absolutely. So how, you know, and then how do you do that? Well, you need to. The only way you can do that is to understand what they've done, and the only way you can do that is start digging holes and testing material, and you know, some of the contractors I would you know, I would put my house on it. Their dams are perfect. You know, they really understand the industry, and that's fantastic. But some of the others are, you know.
So if you're wanting to do a dam, sure. That's over the 3 metres deep, and you go for a resource consent for that, do the guidelines sometimes play a part in the consideration of a resource consent?
For a resource consent? Well,
yes.
I think they would, and this is outside my
well,
world.
If you don't know, don't. I think I'm aware of situations where the guidelines have come into consideration under a resource consenting process in terms of thinking about risk to people downstream and those kinds of things.
Sure.
But anyway, that's outside your experience, so I'll leave it at that.
You've got Mr. Curran coming to talk to you, so he can nail that one for you when you come.
But your experience is more on the building consent side, is it?
It is, Commissioner, yeah. So with that building consent goes a producer statement. So I sign off on that, and it's a life commitment. You know, I'm responsible for that dam forever. So I have a real ownership of these things as far as looking after them. And I think everyone else in the industry thinks like that too. Carry on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I guess just a couple of points here, really. I talked about the PIC, and it all comes back to the owner of the dam, or the responsibility as the owners. Dam deficiencies, it's not like a bald tyre on your car that you can wait a couple of months while you save up to buy a new one. If there's a deficiency, you need to respond. And, you know, you need to keep OIC informed. So Ross Creek was a great example where all the parties worked together to get the outcome that they got. And that last statement, actually, I took that off the MB website the other day. And this is what their focus is around, you know, the entire life cycle of the structure. I've talked a wee bit about this already, but actually I've talked about it a lot, really. We are well represented in the world in terms of our design experience, and are recognised internationally, and we've got great representation on the International Committee of Large Dams, which is terrific for a little country like ours. So that's in the dam safety sector, the environmental sector in relation to dams. Just trying to think what other panels the men and women are on. But we are well represented, which is, yeah, like I say, it's brilliant. So the guidelines are being reviewed as we speak, even though they were put out in 2015. And I think that's a reflection of some of the earthquake sort of stuff that's happened in recent times, and just aligning themselves with the new regulations. It really is a fantastic document in terms of where people like myself are sitting. Again, the guidelines point the finger all the way through at the owners. And a big part of what we do is around educating the owners. And, you know, the opportunity to speak today was all about educating the panel. Making the owners aware of the responsibilities that they have. So this is a typical dam safety program for a large dam, this is something that they would manage for a client. So surveillance and reporting is really simple. You know, there's instrumentation in some of these dams, so that gets recorded. It's all on a program, so it's annual or biannual or 5-yearly or whatever it is, monthly reporting, and that gets incorporated into an annual inspection by someone like myself or another independent. The thing about dams is that everything on a dam is expected to work. And that's a really important message, I guess, I want you to sort of take away. So part of the inspection is to make sure the testing of everything that they've got is working. And then every 5 years, these dams get a major inspection, and again by an independent. And what they're doing is they're assessing the dam against current practices. So if we were to build a dam today, you know, how does that stack up against Ross Creek? And then they make recommendations. So 3 weeks ago we had one of these at Loganburn. I'm going to talk about Loganburn. And then there's a whole lot of documentation that goes around these dams, operations, maintenance, surveillance, and there's training that's got to go in to make sure that people actually know how to use all this stuff, emergency action, what if in the worst case scenario something happens, and then about working through a process of, if there is a problem, working through a program to investigate and coming up with the right solution. So Ross Creek, they found the problem, but they didn't fix it the next day. They actually immediately drew the reservoir down. And on a dam like that, you've got to be really careful because you can damage the dam just because of the nature of how it's been built and stuff. So they didn't empty the reservoir. They pulled it down and then they covered the dam up to stop it cracking. And then they went through an investigation program, came up with an agreed plan, so that was submitted to Regional Council, who put it out to their consultants. All parties agreed that this was the fix, this was an appropriate fix, and then they went ahead and did the build. And then they applied for a code of compliance to say that, hey, what we designed or what we said we were going to build is what we built. So if...
All building act stuff.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
I just want to quickly talk about Loganburn and use that as an example of some of the stuff we do. So we've got the Manuhira Kea catchment in the light green, and then to the right as we look at it, it sits the Manuhira catchment. And at the head of that is the Loganburn reservoir. There's a joint part to this. Trustpower and Manuhira Irrigation Company own some of the infrastructure jointly. And then Trustpower owns a couple of little power stations. And so the way this works is the Tyree River is a free-flowing catchment, and depending on the water that comes down, Loganburn release is augmented to provide water for irrigation and hydropower. This is the Loganburn Dam, which is a concrete-faced rockfall dam. So if you can imagine a great big sort of concrete slab down the front at a 45-degree angle, it's not quite that, but we'll say it is. And then it's got, carefully engineered fill, gravel fill in behind it, which that concrete impermeable layer sits on. So that's what holds that water back. And then what we're looking at there is an overflow spillway. So when the reservoir gets up to a certain height, it just empties itself, you know, and it, the idea that it doesn't damage the dam. And then...
How's the dam drained? You need to lower.
Yep. So.
You come
into
that, sorry.
Yeah, no. Good question. There is a tunnel, and this thing going on. Yeah. So this is the tunnel here. Here's the intake structure. There's a wee bridge there that sits out over the water, and I'm going to show you this in a wee bit more detail. So the intake's there, flows through here, 86 metres, and there's a wee gatehouse there with a wee radial gate in it, and it can be controlled remotely or locally to release irrigation flows and, in an emergency, draw the reservoir down. Now, it's only designed for 8 cubics, and there's 110 million cubic metres of water in there. So it would take a long time to pull that reservoir down under those conditions, months and months and months. But it's still capable of doing that. And if they, for whatever reason, say there was a massive earthquake and that, that reservoir had to be lowered, you would explore other options. You know, you'd probably cut a hole in the spillway to let it down so that you could do whatever you needed to do. But just a wee bit of background so that you can understand what happened. It's built in 1984, so really it's a new dam in our eyes. It's had 37 years of use since that time. And the water in the reservoir is very acidic, which leads me to my next slide. But they had a five yearly in 2016, and it was actually Ian Walsh that did this assessment. And all he said was, hey, the stuff underwater, how's it looking? Is it working? Show me that it's working. So I came along in, when did I come along? 2018. I think it was, and was given the list that Ian had put together of things that he, I won't say wasn't happy about, that he, but he wanted answers to. So I was tasked with working through that list of engineering concerns. So again, here's our intake structure, our wee tunnel through the hill here. So this is our hill, here's our wee tunnel, and at one end you've got a fish screen that stops the fish flowing into the tunnel when they open up the gate, and that's a consent condition. And then when you want to have a look in the tunnel, you drop a bulkhead, which is a stop log, which is a, just a big steel plate, drop it in there, and you open up the radial gate and a few other valves, and you drain it, and so that we can go in and have a look at it. And that's just good dam safety practice to keep an eye on things. So when I got involved, the fish screen, they pulled the fish screen out. And this was it here on the right. It was absolutely knackered. And I, for the life of me, I just couldn't work out what the hell had happened. So I rang Ian up and I said, what's going on here? You know, and he said, oh, well, did you think about the acidic nature of the water? No, I didn't, Ian, but I do now. And so this is it refurbished. And so these are these wee panels that sit in here. And it's the same fish screen that used to look like that. And just to give you an idea, that thing there weighs about two average cars. So it's a massive structure for, I don't know how the big the fish are in there, but this is a massive structure. Even Loch Ness would struggle with this one. So we replaced all that, and not only did we replace it, but nobody had ever pulled it out in the life of this dam, so we figured out, we put some systems in place for pulling it out, and then we put a maintenance schedule in place. So every year it gets pulled out, water blasts, and they touch it up with a special paint. And so, you know, hand on heart now, we've addressed three things. So we've addressed the consent condition, which helps my environmental colleagues sleep at night, knowing that there's no fish that can go down the tunnel. Operationally, I don't know how they got water through those screens, but you know, that works perfect when they want the water, when the farmers need the water. And from a dam safety perspective, I know that when they open that gate, it will work. It needs to work when they tell them to open the gate. And so we tick all the boxes. So that's what it looked like 3 weeks ago after being in the water. You know, so we've had it out every year. And next year we'll probably water blast it again and give it another paint. Paint's cheap compared to what had to happen here, right? where are we? So at the other end of it was the wee gatehouse, and this is the wee gate that came out. And the tunnel's 1.5 diameter, so you've got to be quite short to walk up it. And this wee radial gate, which is built like a Sherman tank, has a 20mm plate on the front of it. And when they pulled it out, I thought it was stuffed. It was a real mission to get it out. But when they sandblasted it, this is what they saw on the right-hand side, which is just a section of one corner. But 20mm plate had 20 more holes through it. And so cavitation and the acidity of the water had really, in just a short time, 37 years is nothing, had nearly trashed this radial gate. Now, we got Far Engineering from Dunedin in to And they're the guys that look after the big Clyde Dam, you know, spillway gates. They're amazing people. Oh, no, we can put that back together. And they did, and that's the refurbished one. They did an absolutely brilliant job. And same thing, so we had them up there as part of this five-yearly inspection. What I've also done is put the maintenance program into a five-yearly inspection. So even though we fixed this in 2018, I got them back this year, and it'll cycle in 5 years now, and it still looks exactly like that. So when we did the inspection, we had 9 different companies up there. We had divers, and we had electrical, mechanical, control system people. We had everyone doing their thing, so that, you know, we've got hand on heart. We know that Loganburn's in great shape. And that's the sort of thing that we need to do right across the dam world. And we're slowly going to work through that on these other older dams. So I just wanted to give you an example of you know, the sort of thing that we're doing.
So who engaged Ian Walsh to do the survey?
Yeah, the irrigation company themselves.
And then the relationship to you?
Independently, they had a new chairperson at that time. She rang me up and said, could you come and help us with, you know, our obligations? So they understood their obligations around the dam safety.
So there was a distinct role that each of you played?
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know, you know, until I got Ian's report, I didn't know that Ian had been up there or written a report or whatever. I didn't know anything about the scheme, to be honest. Yeah. And that's kind of important too. You need to have, you know, independent eyes. And we're not, you know, we look at things differently, and yeah. So it's in great shape. It would be fair to say that the discussions around the board table were pretty robust about the need to do this. But at the end of the day, you know, they came on board, and I guess that's the other point I wanted to make about, you know, I got involved, say, March 2018 or something, and in that time I probably spent about $500,000 worth of their money. This is outside normal operations, you know, normal business operations, maintaining the irrigation scheme, all that sort of thing. So, yeah, I'm an expensive guy to have around.
For the owner's budget for this, do you know?
Had they budgeted for...
budget for this sort of maintenance?
No. Well, they hadn't, because... yeah, again, it's about the education process, and that's part of it. So, you know, these guys are in good shape now, but their shareholder payments need to have a wee buffer in the background. Mm-hmm. You know, they need to be saving up for these types of events. You know, because they're non-negotiable come the time. But when these things need to be done, you know, and that was part of trying to educate them around. I think of it as a legal responsibility to have these things working properly. Payment's not my problem, it's theirs, but I need to help them understand why they need to get the funds together for it. So, yeah. Yeah, and you know, I guess educating them around dam safety is one aspect of it, but you know, they all live in their own communities, and you know, I guess one of the strong things that comes through for me is they're very community focused, and you know, they're not going to let anything happen upstream of their community. So that's a big selling point when we have our discussion. So you know, the Pulburn Dam, worst case scenario, if it failed, it would flow down through their valley, and they've got a primary school that's a smack in that valley. So there's no way that board is going to let anything happen to those children.
Which dam is that?
The Pulburn Dam.
Pulburn.
Yeah, it's part of the Ida Valley. Now, it sits outside of the flat part, but it's close enough that's a real focus for them, and so it should be. Yeah.
So do you do the studies that show what, you know, if the dam broke, where it would go?
I can do, but it's... Normally I would manage something like that, Commissioner, yeah, because there's all the modelling and stuff, you know, Michael Levin and stuff like that they use. It's fantastic, and there's some great people that produce those things. So in terms of the Ida Valley dams, Duncan and Taylor put together the the dam break studies, and so the Pulburn and the Upper Manaburn and where that goes and who might be affected by that, and then the emergency action plans fall out of that. So, you know, in that is the list of all the people that, that need to be contacted or that need to be made aware. And, yeah, my plan in the future for these guys is to be involved. You know, we'll get civil defence involved and we'll collectively talk to the communities around what potentially could happen. Worst case.
Are these in place now for all the dams?
Emergency action plans, most definitely. But I want to take it a wee bit further than that and, you know, and talk to the communities if we can.
For all dams is the operation, maintenance and surveillance procedures and plans in place.
Yes.
Mm. Yep. So you haven't got anyone sitting outside those guidelines with not monitor or without having engaged appropriate advice from engineers and others. So
sure.
They're all in the tent, if you like. And
yeah, so I can't, like I said before, Ida Byrne and Falls, I can't comment about that, but I'm quietly confident that if they haven't got them, they'll be getting them because Ian's involved and he's that sort of guy.
Yeah.
In terms of the hydro dams and the hydro companies, you know, Trustpower, have got a really solid dam safety program. Pioneer Energy, I'm heavily involved in that and I know where they're at, you know, so that's why I can't talk about Fraser. And certainly Contact Energy, you know, they're all over their stuff too, so... You know, the hydro companies are in great shape, and the irrigation companies are getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How do you define a dam owner? I know you mentioned who was it? It might have been Logan Byrne. The dam owners being an irrigation company and Trustpower, I think you said.
What is
a dam owner?
So it's a wee bit unique in that. That particular relationship, and this is my understanding, okay? Mm. But Logan Byrne Dam, Manitoto Irrigation Company own that outright.
Mm-hmm.
Okay with that? Yep.
Don't look at it.
No, yeah, I'm pretty sure they do, 100%.
I'm just trying to get that from you, what is a dam owner?
Yeah,
anyway,
so then,
Logan Byrne, the Manitoto Irrigation Company, owns the structure or owns the permits or has both?
I probably should not say because that's not my area. But Matt will say tomorrow or today when he gets to speak.
Who's Matt?
Matt Curran.
Mr. Curran,
sorry.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, so...
So there's no definition of owner in or dam owner in your guidelines?
It just refers to the dam owner.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Good point.
Okay.
Hmm.
Yeah, because that's actually ultimate responsibility, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. And so I was just sitting there thinking, is it somebody who owns the permits, who holds the permits, or somebody who owns land upon which this structure's sitting? Who is a dam owner? Yeah. Okay. They probably all know themselves, unless it's a catastrophic failure, then they might not know. So it's just a question.
Yes. Mm. So, you know, so the Ida Valley, they've got six structures, which were all handed over to them, was it 1989, I think.
Yeah.
So they are dam owners.
The Ida Valley Irrigation Co.
The Ida Valley Irrigation Company, yes.
Mm. Mm.
Is my understanding.
Mm.
Okay. Is there anything else I want to say? Oh, yeah. I think the other thing that I wanted to really make clear to you is that I think of these things as intergenerational. You know, Ross Creek Dam, you can look at the, you know, the length of duration there. The irrigation dams, you know, the three or four generations of people have been through these now and benefited and all that sort of thing. I see my own role as, you know, just a short part of the cycle, and the idea is that, you know, under my reign, I'll get it as best I can, but the next people will be able to pick up and run with it. So if I use Ida Valley again as an example, you know, they've set up an electronic database, and then I've fed everything into it, and You know, it's all mm. there. If I get run over by a bus tomorrow, it's mm. all there. Mm. And the next people can, you know, look after it like I've been looking after them, I guess. And likewise, you know, there's some really interesting things to discuss in terms of boards and irrigation schemes and whether you're just looking after it for your period or whether you're putting money away for long-term sort of down the thing. So, yeah, nothing lasts forever. So, you know, at what stage would these structures have to be replaced, for example?
Mm.
If Ross Creek is 150 years old, could it be 300 years old?
Mm.
And likewise with these other ones. So, and there's no reason to think, unless there's a catastrophic event,
mm.
that they, if they're looked after properly, that they couldn't be there, you know? There's,
mm-hmm.
yeah. So I think we've got to start thinking a wee bit more about the age of these structures and how we manage it and the need for money in the budget to look after them, not better, but I guess if she was my mother, she's a very capable woman. My mother's passed away, by the way, but she's a very capable woman, and I wouldn't be too worried about it. If she was my grandmother, I would, you know, I'd be a bit more concerned about her,
mm.
and I'd take much better care of her. And if she was my great-grandmother, mm. I'd be all over her.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm trying to put the words around that, but you know, you just need to be, you need to be holding their hands all the time.
Mm.
You know?
But yeah, so if it's your great grandmother, you're talking about the likelihood of an event occurring and the consequences of that event. So if it's your grandmother, it's your dams,
mm.
the likelihood of an event is increased. Is that what you're saying? Or just, or not necessarily increase, but the maintenance, surveillance and investigation has to...
reflect that.
Has to reflect the age of the dam. So
yes.
you're not necessarily saying an increased risk or probability of an event occurring necessarily increases, but your surveillance, maintenance and investigation must reflect the age of the dam.
Thank you. Yeah. That's well put.
Okay, no, that's right. Because that's... critical, because I think we've heard a lot about how old some of these dams are, and you know, a lot of them seem to be depression projects.
Yes.
But that one should not infer from that, therefore, there is an increased likelihood of failure or catastrophic failure, however you know you measure your high or your medium events, but rather what is but that your surveillance programs and maintenance is reflective of the age and, I guess, the construction.
Yep.
Yep, okay.
Thank you.
Just on that front, the 5 years, you know, the bigger...
Yes.
Is that built into the council guidelines?
Yes, it is, Commissioner. Yeah, it's great. I'm a big, big fan of it. So I'm just finishing similar studies for two dams in Tasmania. Yeah, they've got similar programs, and you know, we work closely with them. Only difference with them and us is they don't have earthquakes like we do, you know.
No.
So they get rather excited about magnitude 4, whereas most Kiwis don't get out of bed for magnitude 4.
Right.
Mm. So interesting. And finally, you know, we've covered some of this already, but and just building on what you said, Your Honour, you know, the costs are going to increase.
Mm.
Just because we do need to be all over these things,
mm.
And that's for the boards to work through. Mm. You know, the dams are getting older. I dropped the small earth dam out of the next statement here about the Menihirikea catchment. The little one was built in 1955 because it's only got a very small reservoir behind it. I think it's 15,000 cubic metres. It's absolutely nothing. Doesn't mean I won't be looking after it because I will.
Mm.
But the rest of them range between 90 and 118 years old.
Mm.
So, you know, that's they are such an important, integral part of the communities and the economics for these areas. They are, you know, yeah.
Do you want to just talk to that first one about safety being compromised by a 6-year rollover? I thought you said somewhere earlier that if a problem's identified, it needs to be fixed now. It can't be delayed.
That's right. That's right, Mr. Commissioner. So I guess in your deliberations, what I'm saying to you here is that I'm really concerned that if you roll it over, if you roll over your water permits for 6 years, like there's been discussion about, that it compromises the dam owner's ability to do what I need to do for them.
Now, we don't understand in what way, given that that obligation
right.
Exists independently from any decision as to duration.
Right. So let me explain further. It's all about finance. I need money to to run these plans. Now, what I'm hearing is that their financiers are saying to them already that a 6-year term and they're going to struggle with approving funding for their on-farm projects, whatever they might be. So this is not their on-farm projects. Mm. They may be able to park stuff up for 6 years, and I'm talking out of school here because I don't know what they've got.
This is the financiers being the banks.
Yes.
And so you're reflecting back what you've heard anecdotally.
Yes.
That banks won't lend for operations, maintenance or surveillance of these dams unless they know the dams, whatever that means, because we don't know what that means yet, are permitted for a longer period of time. But you haven't seen any evidence of that.
No, I haven't.
No. And the obligation at the moment is resting with the dam owner, whoever that is.
Yes.
Yeah.
So you're right, but what I want to say to you is that I can't afford to have them in that position that they can't allow the programs to continue on. Do you know what I mean?
If they don't allow programs to continue on, okay, so they, quite apart from jeopardising the use of the water, downstream use of the water, dam from dam.
Yeah.
What then, if a dam owner is not maintaining a dam appropriately? What are the regulatory tools, if anything, available to presumably a regional council?
Right. So with the legislation the way it is at the moment, they're a wee bit... It's in a very grey zone. I'm not sure, you know, how it would play out if an event happened where a dam was compromised in some way and that they had to do something. Like the worst case scenario from an owner's perspective is that the regulatory people would step in.
And lower the water?
That would be one way of doing it. That would be one, or step in and do something about the dam.
And charge back.
Yes.
So looking at enforcement mechanisms under the Resource Management Act.
Yes, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The regulatory people know that there was a problem.
Pretty small world we live in, to be honest. You know, most people know. Yeah.
So there's no reporting regime to the council?
Oh, yes, there is. So if there's if there's an incident, then I'm obligated to tell them.
Mm.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, but word of mouth probably got there faster than my emails anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, we had an incident in Manitoto end of March, a wee dam blew out. And, you know, every man and his dog rang me to tell me. It wasn't one of mine, thankfully, but it's amazing how word gets round.
Mm.
I guess I wanted to bring it to your attention that, you're talking about the 6-year thing and there may be something else here going on that puts them in a pretty awkward position as in terms of dam owners.
Mm.
I mean, the bottom line too, of course, around health and safety and director liability, and I said it before, but they do have a massive community focus too. So it's not all about the law. You know, they are Saturday night, they go down to the pub and they're talking to the neighbours, and the neighbours are saying, you know, they would be into them if they weren't happy with how the board was behaving. So, you know.
Yep. Understand that. Right. I think that your end of your slides?
Yes, it is. So thanks, Sean.
Excellent. And we're going to take a copy of those slides as well, because it's actually been really helpful. And we're going to take morning tea so that you can have some rest before any questions come from the lawyers. How does that sound?
Yep.
So you're still on your oath, and no doubt Mr. Page will bring you a cuppa.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Before I forget, not about the cuppa, I wonder whether we should have that produced as an exhibit.
We should, yep. So we're up to ORUG 3, aren't we?
I have no idea. Yep. ORUG 3, thank you.
So exhibit ORUG 3, PowerPoint slideshow. I forgot what the title page is, but brackets, dams, brackets for the record. Right, so we can pick that up and then, yeah, okay, very good. All right, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
All rise.